It is your extended news at noon. Tracy Morgan in with you. So let's jump into this because today we have Dr. Rottinghaus on the phone with us, Chief Medical Officer and Vice President of Medical Affairs with the Butler Health System. And we're going to be talking about the Butler Health System's COVID surge plan, the ICU bed issue, what it means for medical care right now. So Dr. Rottinghaus, thank you very much as always for your time.
Tracy, great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Let's get into the ICU bed capacity issue first. We've put this out there as a news story. We get information directly from the Butler Hospital. Often we get from the Butler Health System an update, and this comes often to our newsroom, like the report we got yesterday. 44 people that you're treating, 7 people in the ICU. Now, for months we haven't seen those numbers, but it's just the example that I'm giving. So when we're talking about 7 people in the ICU, what does that mean when the Butler Health System puts out a press release that says that Butler and also Clarion Hospital, by the way, are at capacity for critical care or ICU beds? When we're talking about the ICU, are you thinking of that as a unit that only has 7 beds? Or are you considering in these reports that you're expanding the number of beds that you're using and using those as ICU beds?
Well, the clarity behind those reports and putting that information out, you remember back in the spring when everything in terms of, elective or what were considered elective procedures were put on hold to create capacity within health systems. We stopped a lot of our, regular care and scheduled procedures. The difference between then and now is that, we really understand the importance of those procedures and the importance of that care, to the community. We understood it then, but we're very reluctant to pull back that far again because those are things that need to be done. It's care that needs to be met and rendered and, to keep our community healthy, to keep people active. So the way the numbers are reported now, we are continuing as many of those operations, and when I say operations, I mean really, everything, every level of care. So we're continuing to operate and function as a health system to the fullest extent we can while managing, influxes and certainly surges of COVID patients that need to be admitted to the hospital. So when you see those reports, we're reporting based on everybody that's in the hospital, everybody that's in an ICU bed, not just COVID. So although we may report, 7 COVID patients in the ICU, we could have, another 15, 20 who are not here because of COVID that also require an ICU level of care.
So then I think that's part of the confusion for the layperson like me, because we don't live this in and out every single day like you do in the hospital. So when I hear ICU, I think of the ICU unit, of what I understand and have seen of the ICU unit. And that only has so many beds. So are you expanding what you are you adjusting your terminology within the hospital to expand beds to be ICU beds beyond that unit?
So back in the spring, we made contingency plans, and that was to expand every level of care, whether it's, a regular, medical surgical bed, a bed with telemetry or like heart monitoring capabilities, and then intensive care. So the plans that we made back then, some of those we have started to enact and to roll out as our number of patients in the hospital demands. So I can see where, it gets tricky in the thought process, maybe confusing at some point. But when we're talking about intensive care unit sites of care, yes, we have expanded. We've pushed into, at least one surge unit and have prepped another. And the biggest reason behind that, if we only had to care for patients with COVID-19 who needed hospitalization, then we would be better equipped and certainly be easily capable of handling, that number of patients right now. What the next few weeks, couple months brings, not really sure. We're trying to project that out. But at the same time, I think it's important to know that we are continuing and will continue to meet the other care needs of the community, whether it's heart issues, hips, knees, other surgeries, other procedures, and other general medical care that is not necessarily COVID-related. So that's one of the reasons why you're seeing a lot of health systems that are very full right now. And quite frankly, during a normal year, we have predictably very busy times of the year. You know, flu season is always very busy. So hospitals are used to running at or near capacity. When you throw a pandemic on top of everything else that we do, then that's where these, you know, surge plans and other plans to accommodate a lot more patients come in. So that's why we spend a substantial amount of time creating those conditional plans that we can, you know, enact and go live with at the appropriate time. And we're seeing some of that now.
Is there a number that you can attach to the at capacity verbiage that was in the press release? Because again, you know, seven people in the ICU, it seems like there are a lot more that are in ICU beds. And I ask that because whenever that number keeps changing, and I do want to get into the conversation of what do you think that December is going to be like? Because if that number continues, then how far out within the hospital's building do you go? Because there are other people who need medical treatment.
Yeah, so we do have contingent plans to expand our ICU even greater than it is now. So our typical ICU unit in terms of a single unit, has 24 beds, and that is, you know, staffed constantly. It's what we're used to using. We do have another surge unit that we use, you know, from time to time, and in times when we're busy, even pre-COVID, you know, we would use that fairly frequently. So, you know, when we say we're at capacity, and I think, you know, the reason behind that that announcement or that thought was we have filled all of the typical ICU sites of care that we would use even when we're very busy. So, it's not time for us to panic. It's time for us to act strategically upon, you know, those plans that we made before. And again, this is because we're continuing to provide the care that we want to provide to the community alongside, you know, taking care of COVID patients. And another big difference between the spring and now is that we are very accustomed to managing COVID. We know how to, you know, keep our staff safe. We know the isolation and, you know, precautions that we should take with respect to these patients. So, we do have a level of comfort with taking care of both, types of patients at the same time. So, I guess the best way I can answer your question is, you know, as we continue to bring more patients in and continue to fill beds that were either part of our normal daily, you know, operating plans versus surge plans, we will continue to, you know, expand those operations as we see fit. So when we hit capacity in a normal unit that we have open, then we will, open other units and draw in staff as we need to. The biggest limitation here is going to be in terms of staffing, and that's going to be the same across every health system.
And Dr. Rottinghaus, I want to get to that in just a moment, yeah. But let me ask you a couple of other questions because people hear you talk and they think, but what about my need? What happens if I do not have COVID and I would need an ICU bed? What if I need to just go to the hospital and need to stay overnight? Do you have capacity for the other healthcare needs that are warranted out there for individuals in the public?
We do. We are continuing to meet the needs of the public and of the community. We will plan on continuing to meet the needs of the public in the community, and our communication will be very clear behind that if we ever reach that point. I don't believe that we are going to. And I think for multiple reasons. I think number one, our surge capability and our surge capacity to expand our operations, I feel very good about our plans. And then two, I think our coordination across the region, as we constantly communicate with other systems and other hospitals, then we will be able to help each other out, in these instances. It may require pulling back on some functions outside of the hospital and pulling that staff in. But we will disrupt care in the community and that ongoing need as little as possible. And right now we have no intentions of disrupting that care at all. So people that are sick, people that are ill, people that need medical care should absolutely seek it, whether they have COVID-19 or not.
So this entire expansion of the COVID ICU beds, if you will, they're in a separate location. This is not mingled in within the hospital, right?
So it is in the hospital. Everything that we're doing right now is located within the walls of the hospital.
But what I mean is it's a whole different department. Like, you know, you don't have one room with a COVID patient, the next room with just a medical need, and the next room with a COVID patient. Like, all the COVID patients are in a certain section. Is that right?
We keep COVID patients on, you know, what we dedicate as COVID units, and, you know, keep those patients together,
okay.
for many reasons, not the least of which is, you know, the staff that is there, has all the equipment and all the, you know, appropriate PPE and other things stockpiled in those areas.
And let me just make a note before we continue, and I do want to get to your staff, is the ER is different than the ICU, so the ER is still open, correct?
The emergency department is fully functioning and is still open, yes.
Okay, good. All right, so let's turn to the staff there at the Butler Hospital. Folks, if you're just joining us, this is Dr. David Rodinghouse, Chief Medical Officer and Vice President of Medical Affairs with the Butler Health System. And we're talking about the latest announcement with a hospital that's considered the COVID surge plan and the IC bed issue that we just addressed. So let's talk about your staff. Do you have enough staff to do this? Because what you're doing now is going to trickle down into non-emergent elective surgeries and outpatient procedures. And how do you get all of this done? Do you have enough staff?
So we have enough staff to enact all the plans that we created in the spring, provided we pull them from other areas, you know, where care is being rendered. So that becomes, you know, really the balance in the math is if we hit the point where we're opening every surge unit and every, you know, contingency plan that we made in the spring, then we have to pull staff from, you know, all over the system. So that might be, you know, outpatient or office sites of care. It might be other areas where, you know, we're going to unfortunately have to pull back on some of those services within the community. That will be, you know, options of you know, final or near final resort, because, again, we want to provide that care in the community, and we will continue to do that to the full extent of our ability. But if there comes a time where we have to call, you know, so many staff back to the hospital to render care in here and open every unit available, then we'll do that. We'll do whatever it takes to meet the needs of the sickest patients in our community and the sickest patients that come in. But our plan right now is to, you know, just, you know, sequentially open units as we see them, you know, as we see the need. And to, you know, continue to enact those plans on, you know, a very measured and calculated basis. You know, the truth behind this is that this is very fluid, and those numbers and those situations change often multiple times per day. You know, so Clarion Hospital, which, you know, is now part of our system, filled up very fast. So, you know, we extended some help to them, and, you know, we tried to decompress them, you know, to the best of our capability. So, you know, we're all in pretty much the same boat. It's just going to happen at different rates at different places. But the one thing I'm very confident in is the plans that we have enacted will allow us to, you know, provide care to the community, you know, to anybody that has a health issue or health problem or certainly health emergency. We can continue to do that alongside, you know, taking care of COVID patients as well.
Are nurses that have not been taking care of COVID patients, are they now having to do such a job? And if they are, is there special training that goes along with this position?
So back when all this started, we, you know, trained everybody in appropriate, what's called donning and doffing, and appropriate personal protective equipment. So how to put it on, how to take it off without infecting yourself, and to be careful not to infect others. So that training is across the entire system. If somebody hasn't been, you know, doesn't feel up to speed on that, then we train them on the spot. So some, you know, some people that haven't been taking care of COVID patients all along, at some point in time will probably need to, but we have that training in place. You know, they're comfortable with it. If there are any questions or any, you know, refreshers that need to be done, then we do them, you know, immediately and in a very timely fashion. For the most part, our COVID patients have been kept in units where the staff has been, you know, taking care of them all along. So there's a you know, a real sense that the staff is used to, you know, the procedures, used to, you know, how to, you know, protect themselves in the proper isolation that goes along with it.
I know we can't talk about every medical situation, but I was going through my head in some, like the cancer treatments are done typically off site, if I have that correct. If you have a heart attack, a stroke, go to the hospital. You know, the hospital is open, emergency department is open for you, and you will be taken care of. One department that I'm curious about, does this surge plan affect the maternity ward, because those mothers are going to have to stay?
Right. Our maternity ward is open. You know, again, we have the same isolation and infection control policies there that we have throughout the hospital. So, no, if there's care that is needed, you know, and in this case, particularly maternity care, then absolutely we are equipped to provide it, and we will continue to provide that care to the community.
Dr. Rottinghaus, just a couple more questions for you. In the past, we have talked about how COVID can incubate for a week or more before someone would feel the effects, if they are going to feel the effects of COVID. Thanksgiving just passed. I can't imagine that you're seeing those results right now, but what are your thoughts on that? And then I'll just give you my follow-up question, because if we are at this point now, how bad will December get?
Well, you know, when you look at the data across our county, and I think for all intents and purposes, there is so much community spread now that it's to break down county to county or zip code to zip code doesn't make a whole lot of difference. It's widespread everywhere. So, you know, I know Allegheny County, Butler County are seeing, you know, significant numbers, you know, of positives, and it continues to increase all the time. So, you know, to some extent, we knew this was coming. It's what the experts have been saying. You know, as people get shunted indoors more, you know, during the cold months, you know, and certainly we have our share of cold months up here in Pittsburgh, then transmission will increase. So, you know, gatherings, people being around each other, those rates of transmission will increase. The number of positive, you know, patients out there will increase. Our rate of admission to the hospital, or, you know, really our absolute number of patients in the hospital with COVID-19, you know, really parallels the positives in the community. So, you know, the reality is that the virus is here now. It's embedded in our community. It's being rapidly spread in our community. And we follow those numbers very closely, because at least it gives us a little bit of lead time on what to expect. So, you know, when we start seeing a lot of positives, you know, in the community, we know that in, you know, a week or two, we're going to start to see more and more cases, you know, of patients that need to come into the hospital and get care in the hospital.
And what we've been talking about today is the surge plan phase one, as it was considered in the press release. So what's phase two, and when do we get there? Will you eventually be sending patients elsewhere?
Well, we do sometimes transport patients elsewhere. Mostly it's because of, you know, things that we don't do here, such as high-level trauma or, you know, children's hospital cases that belong in a children's hospital. At this point in time, we don't have plans to decompress by transporting patients out. As you know, and I think as we've talked about before, there is a very steady and constant communication among all the health systems in southwestern Pennsylvania. You know, we're very closely tied together. And the offer for support, you know, from one system to another has been there from the beginning. But, you know, for now, we will just continue to enact plans and open more units as we see the need. You know, really the decisions that we'll have to make will be on how many staff we need in the hospital and from where do we need to, you know, to pull that staff. So, you know, again, we will continue to push serving every need of the community as we have while caring for COVID patients alongside them. But if it comes to the point where we need to draw more staff in and bring more staff back to the hospital, then those are the further phases of the plan that, you know, that you're referring to. So just as we open more units and as we open more beds in the hospital, then we have to pull more of our staff in.
I'm going to change directions just a bit, and I know we got to wrap up here in about a minute or so, but my original plan was to talk to you about vaccines, but in 10 minutes, of course, plans change altogether. So I'm glad that we were able to have this conversation today, but let me just ask you about vaccines, if you would, because we hear news out there, the UK granting Pfizer emergency usage of their vaccines. I know there's questions about delivery and when does it get here and who gets it first, but let me just ask your general thought about the news that has been out there about vaccines. Is it positive, or have you studied those reports yet? What's your thought?
Well, certainly the ability of the vaccine to prevent COVID infection, in those that have received it, that data seems excellent. The logistics of transport, administration, this is a logistics scheme that is just absolutely incredible, across this country and across the whole world. But the data that I've seen, just to be brief on the vaccines in terms of preventing disease, seems very, very good. When you're talking rates of 90-95% ability to prevent infection, those are outstanding. I think what remains to be seen is, does this beget lifelong immunity? Do you need booster vaccines in the future? I think all those questions will become, evident to us, or the answers will become evident to us in the future, but those questions will remain for a little bit of time. The priority, certainly is to vaccinate as many people as possible, and, along with healthcare workers, which seem to be targeted by the CDC and HHS, obviously we want to vaccinate those people that are most susceptible to this virus and that are at highest risk of significant disease. As that information becomes available to us and as we're communicated to by the feds when we will expect shipments, then, we're already making plans for how we're going to distribute that vaccine amongst, our staff. But it is going to be a big challenge. But the news of a vaccine coming, while very reassuring and very exciting and very promising, still our best defense is just by simply doing the basics right, and that's wearing a mask, washing hands, continuing the distance. I know it's very difficult during the holidays. We all struggle with this, including everybody in the hospital. We all let our guard down from time to time, and we all, make mistakes in those. But I think the important thing is to stick to that as much as we possibly can, because that is still our most effective defense for spread of the virus at this point in time.
So basically, don't let our guard down because we're hearing about vaccines.
Correct. There's been a fair amount of promising news. There's been treatments that have come out that do, affect the mortality and how sick people get. But this is still a very serious virus. It's not time to let our guard down yet. Hopefully that day comes sooner rather than later. We will get through this. But for now, our best defense is just preventing spread of the virus by doing those simple things.
Dr. David Rodinghouse, Chief Medical Officer and Vice President of Medical Affairs with the Butler Health System, thank you as always for your time.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Take care.